I'm Mary Walter here with Vince Colonnese.
Oh, good morning. If Democrats have their way this Tuesday, they're going to pass legislation requiring you to submit your friend to a background check if you want to sell them a gun. For more detail on this and all the efforts by Democrats here to change our gun laws, we go to John Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center and author of The War on Guns. John, good morning.
Morning.
All right, so there's a renewed push in Congress for so-called universal background checks. Democrats pursuing this yet again. Give us the brass tacks on what that means.
It means anytime you transfer a gun, could be father to son or, relative to relative or friend to friend, what have you, you're going to have to undergo a background check to transfer the gun. And so in Washington, D.C., it costs $125 to go and transfer a gun from one person to another. It varies across states in terms of how much it costs. So you can find it for as little as $55 to transfer a gun in Oregon. In some place like New York City, it can be $200 to go and do it.
If you have a universal background check system, I realize that there are some federal record-keeping requirements involved with basically purging background check requests. But this does become something of a de facto gun registry, does it not? I mean, the government does basically find out about every purchase.
Sure. Well, I mean, the dealers who conduct the background check are required to keep the records that are there. And the government regularly goes and asks, goes back and finds out who bought a particular gun. I mean, it usually doesn't do anything as far as crimes or anything being solved. But, yeah, at some point, the government could go and say 5 years down the road, send us all your records that you have there, and you have kind of an instant national registration for guns. I mean, my concern is who gets stopped from buying guns as a result of this? And $125 in D.C. where they're going to be voting on this may not stop you or I from being able to go and buy a gun, but the very people that my research indicates who benefit the most from owning guns, poor minorities who live in high-crime urban areas, whether it's $55 or $125, that may be the difference between whether or not they're legally able to defend themselves and their families. But it's even worse than that, and that is the background check system that we have is just incredibly flawed in the sense that, we frequently hear that 3 million dangerous or prohibited people have been stopped from buying guns because of background checks. Well, that's false. What they should say is that there have been 3 million initial denials, and virtually all of those turned out to be false positives. I mean, one thing that you hear across any administration, whether it's the Obama and Clinton administrations or Bush, is that they just don't enforce these laws. Well, so you have, less than 1% of these 3 million cases result in any type of prosecutions, either federally or state. Well, the reason why they don't prosecute them is because they're not real cases. I mean, it's one thing to go and prosecute a felon who tried to buy a gun. It's another thing to go and prosecute somebody simply because they have a name similar to a felon from buying a gun. And they could fix this. It's just that gun control advocates refuse to do it. If they just required that the federal government, when it does its background checks, has to meet the same requirements that private companies do when they do criminal background checks on employees, they wouldn't be making these mistakes. We use things like phonetically similar names and birthdays.
Yes.
You give so much more information when you go and fill out your form. Everybody thinks, well, I'm giving all this information. Surely they're using this.
Right.
But you'll find denials for people because they simply have similar birthdays and similar names to those they're denying from purchasing.
So this sounds a lot like the Do Not Fly list. Remember the Do Not Fly list when I believe it was Ted Kennedy at one point when it was on the Do Not Fly list because people have similar sounding names or they get on there by accident. So we know that it doesn't work. So I guess my question is where are the Second Amendment defenders on the messaging with this? Again, I think a lot of this comes down to messaging and the fact that the ball is being dropped. Why isn't there a message on disenfranchisement of the poor. You know, we worry about disenfranchising them from their vote and having to show an ID. What about disenfranchising them from their Second Amendment rights? So I never knew that this background check system was so flawed. I just learned that now. Why is that not front and center?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I had a piece in the New York Times last year on it, and I've written in other places on this. You talk to people in, the Bush administration who were actually involved in enforcing these laws, people like Reagan Bush, who was the first head of Project Safe Neighborhoods, and they'll tell you, you know, because people complain all the time from both parties, you know, why aren't you enforcing these laws? And they'll say, look, we'd love to enforce them if there were real cases. You know, these are easy prosecutions to go and make. I mean, you have the form. You know,
right.
Were you a felon? You know, when you signed the form, it says they're under threat of perjury. Are you denying that you were a felon there? I mean, it's not a difficult case to go and prosecute. It's not. It's very low cost to prosecute if they wanted to, if they were able to go and prosecute these cases. But, you know, you look at the reviews that they have on these. They
yep.
have five stages of review. The first stage is simply checking the records to make sure that the paperwork is lined up.
Hey, John, let me just, before we let you go, I really need to ask you about Governor Ralph Northam, what he's up to in Virginia. He rolled out a package of bills. This was on Friday. Universal background checks, banning so-called assault weapons, having individual purchase limits on one handgun per month. Also, red flag laws where they can actually take your guns from you. What are the impact? Let me just focus on red flag laws. What's the impact of that?
Yeah. Look, you know, it's kind of like the movie Minority Report, where they're trying to go and predict whether somebody's going to go and commit a crime. We already have laws on the books in all 50 states that if you know, you have mental health problems and you're a danger to somebody else or yourself, they can do a whole range of different things, from restraint orders to, you know, involuntarily commitment. What
right.
these laws generally try to do is to get people who aren't mentally ill, in some sense. When you
yeah.
go and you talk to the people and they say, well, what do you look for? And they say, well, they'll look for things like criminal history. Well, there's already laws on criminal histories. If you're a felon, you're banned from owning a gun. If you're a misdemeanor, depending upon the state, you may be banned for life from owning a gun. If they want to change it,
yep.
if they want to say, okay, you've been arrested but not convicted or simply had complaints, and because of that, you should lose the right to own a gun, then change those laws.
Yeah, that becomes very dangerous. This is how a man outside Baltimore got killed towards the end of last year, too, when cops went for a red flag law pickup, tried to take his weapon. He accidentally discharged it, apparently, and then he was shot dead by cops. Amazing stuff. John Lott, thanks. A lot of information on an important issue. We'll have you back soon, sir.